Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Tzadi Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 9 lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Aleph. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance in the margin where we have a topic heading, a nosei, which reads, HaGemara takshe al braisa, dekotani. The Gemara will raise a question on a braisa, on a Tanaic source that's brought in the Gemara, in which it says, HaChosem es hapara v'doshba, one who muzzles up a cow and threshes with it, while muzzled, loike umeshalem. He is lashed and also has to pay money. V'ha yesh klal. And the problem is that do we not have, in fact, a rule that says the ein loiken umeshalmin, that one is not lashed and, in other words, with a double punishment, lashed and made to pay. The Gemara, Yofiu, Gimel Tirutzim. In the Gemara, there will be 3 answers to this particular problem. Now the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Hachoisem esapora, v'doshba, one who muzzled up an animal and a cow and threshed grains with it. Loike umeshalem arba kavin lepora v'dalid v'gimel kavin l'chamor. He is subjected to lashing for violating lo yisachsom shor b'disho, the negative command of against muzzling an animal while threshing with it. And he also has to pay 4 kav. Kav is a dry measure. So it's 4 kav of animal food having muzzled a cow, and he has to pay 3 if he happened to thresh with a donkey. So he has to pay 3 kav for having threshed with a donkey while muzzled. The question is, v'ha einoi loike umes v'einoi loike umeshalim. We have rules concerning punishments. And the rule states that if a person is, let us say, in violation of 2 things, he only gets 1 punishment. Or if, let's say, if there are 2 punishments to be meted out to the offender, he receives only 1. So that if a person is subject, let us say, to execution, he will not be lashed in addition to the eventual execution. Likewise, he does not get lashes and pay. So how do we explain this Tanaic source where you see the individual, the offender, getting lashed and also having to pay? Omar Abaye. So approach number 1. Oh, money, Rebbe Meir, he... This Tanaic source is in fact authored by Rebbe Meir. The Yomar Loike Umeshalem, he disagrees with the rule, and he holds that a person could be subjected to both penalties. Rova Omar, there's an answer here given by Rova. There's a little addition that you can see in the Bach in Ois Aleph. He has Rav Omar Beba Lotzeis Yedei Shamayim. He adds that a person here that's spoken of in this source is coming to fulfill his requirements from above and beyond the letter of the law. In other words, the letter of the law would say that you don't subject him to 2 punishments, Malkus, lashings, and paying, but the individual, the offender featured in this source, wants to wants to, we'll say, atone in a maximum way. So he, in addition to getting the lashings for having violated the Isur of Lo Sachsam Shor B'Dishah, not to muzzle and thresh with such an animal, he wants to pay also. And here the Gemara speaks in, I would say, very concise terms. So just by way of background, the Torah makes reference to different kinds of, different situations and kinds of animals that are disqualified as being used as a sacrifice. One of those examples involves an animal given as payment to a harlot, to a zoyna, for her services. That's called an esnan zoyna. If a person, as unfortunate sounding as may be, offers his own mother for illicit relations, he offers her payment. That animal, even though if she were to, let's say, press charges in a court of law that my son owes me the animal, the court would not intervene and make the son pay for that. However, if he does on his own volition give his mother the animal, the, let's say, the sheep, as payment for those services, the sheep is rendered, becomes labeled an esnan. It becomes forbidden to be offered as a sacrifice. So that even though by letter of the law he could not be forced to pay her, because he had relations with none other than his mother, and what he's giving her is, on his own volition, isn't any more than a mere gift. Nevertheless, as we said, the shame, the name, the labeling of an esnan attaches itself to the animal, and it cannot be brought as a sacrifice. Now, what is the connection between that which we just described and the case here of Loikil Mishalim threshing with a muzzled animal? So let us glance in Rashi. We're going to be looking in the, let's say, in the middle of the Rashi, having given already hopefully sufficient background. There's a Rashi that you'll find in the middle of the page. The Dibur Masa was Rava Omar. It's a little bit less than halfway down, but in the middle of that Rashi, we have a dashed underline section where the words Avol Yedei Shomayim Lo Yotza'at Shi Yishalem. As far as what he owes his mother, he still owes her payment for the services, even though, as we said before, the court would not be able to impose an obligation for him to pay. He's subject to execution for having had relations with his mother. And we say, Eino Mesu Mishalim. But nevertheless, he has a certain obligation to pay her for her services. Again, but not by letter of the law, but after he does owe her something. We gave to, and to fulfill his shomayim, his, we'll say, beyond the letter of the law requirements, he hasn't fulfilled that high level of fulfillment until he pays her. And yet, when he does give it to her, it does become labeled as an esnan. Now, the Rashi continues, reading that line again. Avol yedei shomayim lo yotza'at shi yishalem de'i lo ramu tashlumen olei. If the expectation of him to pay is non-existent, kiave nihalo mihavi esnan, if he would then give it to her, would it become labeled an esnan? Matona be'amalu v'yoyv lo. That's a mere gift, unrelated to any sexual misconduct. But since it does become labeled an esnan, it shows that there exists, we'll say, in theory, the need for him to pay. Vegabi choisin nami, regarding muzzling up an animal and threshing with it, thereby saving yourself the food that it otherwise would have eaten while threshing. Tashlumin ramulay, he really owes money. He owes that amount for that he basically saved by having muzzled up the animal. The court, though, cannot impose that financial fine upon him. And since there exists the need to pay, similar to what we said before with regard to the Esnan, the payment for services that he had with his mother, since the need to pay exists, Lo yotzi yedecho voso ad shiyishalem. He hasn't fulfilled his ultimate requirements until he actually pays. So that's what we benefited, by the way, in seeing the Bach Ois Aleph, where he adds lotzeis yedeshamayim. We're talking about the individual who wants to fulfill his ultimate and ultimate requirements. So that's, as we go back to the Gemara text, they said it's very terse, that's what it is. We'll read that again, that's Rova, number 2, Rova Omar, Esnan, Osro Toro, Ve'afilu Bo Al Imo. Rav Papa Omar, the explanation Rav Papa gives is that the obligation, or the sin of muzzling and the obligation to pay, referenced above in the source, do not happen simultaneously. The rule of Ein Loiku Mishalem, Ein Mesu Mishalem, is only when the two penalties arise, the two punishments arise simultaneously. But if they're not simultaneous, then there's no problem in imposing both. And Rav Papa says, Rav Papa Omar, Mishas Mishicha Hichayev Lo B'mazayin Yisrael, upon drawing the animal, you become obligated in feeding it, so that the obligation to feed one's animal starts earlier. Umilkula loki adshas chasima, lashing, the penalty of or punishment of lashing doesn't set in until he actually muzzles up the animal and starts threshing with it. Omar Rav Papa. Here we have a new trend of thought. That's why you see a slash mark in the Gemara. If you look at the side of the Gemara, we have in the margin a nosei, topic heading, slash, mivne, a structural note combined into one. Diamonds will appear in the Gemara, and they highlight shtei she'elois, two questions, shinishalu me Rav Papa, that were asked of Rav Papa. Echad ona kefi hadin, one answer he provides is an answer that reflects the actual law. Ubasheni ona lahem luchumra, and the second answer he gives is an answer that is an answer based on, we'll say, stringency beyond, we'll say, the letter of the law. In the Gemara, the expression that appears as a somewhat confusing expression, you'll see one of them, he answers lav kihilchasa. If you translate that literally, it means that he answers it not according to the halacha, but that would make you think that he answered it incorrectly, but that's not the case. One of the two questions, he answers them with a ruling that simply reflects a stringency beyond the basic law. The questions are not only introduced with diamonds, but we also have Roman numerals 1 and 2. And in our note, we continue reading number 1, Ma'u lolush isa b'cholov. Is it permissible to knead dough that you'll eventually bake into, certainly if you bake it into bread, that will come under question. Can you knead dough using, instead of water, using milk? One has to understand that if he does that, the eventual loaf that is baked is a dairy loaf. Not only today, but back then, people apparently they made sandwiches or something similar to that. They would eat bread together with meat. That was standard fare. But if you have a dairy loaf of bread, eating it together with meat becomes a problem. So do we allow kneading of dough with milk? Number two, Be'inyan Kile Behemo, regarding the topic of mixed breeding animals. Mahu Lahachnis Ladir Min Vesheno Mino. Can one bring into an animal stall two different kinds of animals, a sheep and a goat, and contain them within the same stall? Is there not, we'll say, fear that they'll cohabit, and the resultant animal is a mixed breed? Is there a problem in putting them in the same stall? Obviously, if one would physically mate the female and male of two different varieties together, that would constitute a problem of lo sarbiya b'hebdachokilayim, and not the prohibition against mixed breeding animals. But here he doesn't do that, physically cause cohabitation by physically sticking the two animals together, but he does put them into a stall together. Now the Gemara. Omar Rav Papa, Hani Mili, the following, Ba'u Minoi, Debe Rav Papa Bar Abba, members of the household of Rav Papa Bar Abba, if the Rav Papa here is in fact Rav Papa Bar Abba, he would be saying that members of my household asked me. If it's someone else, then simply saying that people from the household of Rav Papa Bar Abba asked of me the following, Upashti lehu leisura, and I answered their questions that we haven't seen yet in the Gemara. I answered them with a prohibition. I forbade them. Chadak yuchasa, in one case, the prohibition that I ruled was according to the law, the letter of the law. The chada delav kilchus, and the other one was not according to the letter of the law, but it was a ruling of prohibition that is lechumra. I imposed a stringency. In general, this idea of imposing a stringency, one will find in cases where there was lax behavior regarding that a particular area of Torah observance. So in light of lax behavior, sometimes you find rabbinic enactments that impose extra stringency so as to compensate for the laxity exhibited by public behavior. So now we are still, I'm sure, if we didn't give our introduction before from the note on in our margin, you'd be waiting in bated breath, saying, "Nu, what are the two questions that were asked?" So here they go. Number one, Bo Minoi, it was asked of me, says Rav Papa, Malu Lolush Es Ha'isa B'cholav, is one permitted to knead dough using milk as the liquid medium? Upashti Lehu Leisura Kihilchasa, and I responded to their question, forbidding, and that prohibition is in fact letter of the law. It's what is taught in the following Tanaic source, Desanya. Ein loshin es ha'isa b'cholav. One is not allowed to knead dough with milk. Ve'im loshin, if he did so, kol ha'pas kula asura. Mitnei hergel avera. We will forbid the entire bread, the entire loaf, even to eat it on its own with salt. In other words, even if you're eating it in a non-problematic way, the law says you cannot have it around. You can't eat it even with salt. Why? Because hergel avera, because of people's habit, habitual behavior of eating bread with meat. And since it's habitual behavior on the part of people to eat their bread with meat, we don't want you to have it around at all, even if you personally are not planning to eat it with meat. Kayotze bo, similarly, ein toshin es hatanur ba'alya. One is not to smear as a an oven oven lining or like a oven grease on the inside of the oven wall. Alya. Alya is literally the fat tail of a sheep. It's fats, lubrication or fats that come from an animal. And if one has to understand that you're dealing with a type of oven that bread and baked products were baked by sticking the loaves or the hunks of dough on the oven wall. So if you're going to line the oven, the inside of the oven wall with animal fats, the final product will basically be of a meat, of meat status. The im tosh, and if one did smear the inner lining of the wall, of the oven wall with the animal fats, kol hapas kula asura, all the bread that's baked in there is prohibited. Ad shiyasik es hatanur, until he fires up the oven. By yasik es hatanur, by firing it up, so that would expunge any absorbed animal fats from the oven, and it would then be restored to its called parava status. V'idach, the other question. The other question that will now anticipate receiving an answer of prohibition, but not in not letter of the law, but a stringency that it was, that he imposed on them. What is that second question? Again, v'idach, the other one, bo'u minoi, they asked of me, ma'u lahachnis min v'she'eno mino l'dir. Can one put into a deer, an animal's, a stall in which animals stay, two different varieties? Is that considered like mating the two, which would be holding two different animals together while they cohabit? Upashti lehuli sura, and I resolved the question, I answered, I responded to their question, says Rav Papa, lisura, prohibiting. However, delachki ilchasa, technically speaking, there is no problem in putting the two animals in the same stall together. The Omar Shmuel, there are two points that Shmuel makes. The first is not related to us, but it does relate to the issue of cohabitation. And the first point, uvim minafim, this has to do with prohibited relations between people. Let us just take a simple case, a married woman having intimacy with another man, that subjects that particular couple, the prohibited couple, to a court execution. How are witnesses expected to testify about that? So witnesses, if they see the two, the male and female, lying together in the style that of people who cohabit with one another, that is sufficient. Ad shiru kederach hamenafim. Until, or they can testify that they saw cohabitation, if they see the two lying together. Now, Rashi explains what we do not expect on the part of the witnesses is to have a very, we'll say, up-close view of the male insertion into the woman. That we don't require. All that's necessary is for the witnesses to be able to testify that they've, of course, warned them not to, and they end up lying together. Even though, in technically speaking, there wasn't necessarily insertion, there wasn't necessarily actual cohabitation, they were merely lying together. But as far as the requirement of testimony that will lead to their execution, you don't need to have that level of precision, of detail, in order to subject the violating parties to court execution. Now, in contrast, ubikilayim, when it comes to the prohibition of mixed breeding, ad shiyachnis kemachol b'shveferis, The Torah prohibits mixed breeding animals. What is meant by mixed breeding the animals? What is meant by that is, now here the Gemara uses an analogy. A makhol is an applicator that you insert into the tube that holds whatever the mascara, the whatever cosmetic you might be using, an applicator that's inserted into the tube. So that's a fairly vivid parallel to causing cohabitation between two animals, male of one variety, female of another variety. Letter of the law says that the prohibition of mixed breeding is only if you do that. Insert male organ into female animal body. However, escorting two animals of different varieties into the same stall, that is not prohibited by letter of the law. And yet, we saw that Rav Papa, because the people that were asking him the question come from a location where they were rather lax regarding these matters, he issued a ruling of prohibition. I say they were lax, if you want to be very precise, by looking at the Rashi commentary on the second line, or the third line under the Gemara text. He says, "Upashtilu lisura shelo yezalzalu," so that they shouldn't come to being lax. So I'm not 100% sure if we can say they were lax in it, but Rav Papa felt that it's important to rule in a stringent fashion so that they should not come to, in fact, being lax over these halachas, the halacha of the prohibition of mixed breeding. Mosiv Rav Achtavuye Bar Ami. Rav Achtavuye comes and raises an objection to what we just said from a Tanaic source. So just to go over the main point, we just said that one is not in violation of kilayim of mixed breeding animals until he does this very, we'll say, extreme act of prohibition of inserting male organ into female. What does it say in the following source? Ilu ne'emar, had the pasuk said, behemtecha lo sarbiya, ha'yisi oimer, I would have said, lo yechos adam ha'behema b'shah sh'oile ole azachar. If you have two animals of the same variety, there would be a prohibition of holding a male and female of the same variety together when they are experiencing cohabitation, reproduction. But the pasuk doesn't stop with the word sarbia. Talmud lomar kilayim. The pasuk in actuality says b'hem techolo sarbia kilayim, that the prohibition is only if they're of different breeds, a sheep and a goat, for example. So now, lav michlal, can we not then derive from this source the kilayim, that when it comes to mixed breeding, achizon amilo, even merely holding the two animals together would be prohibited? And that's contrary to what we said just before, that kilayim is violated in terms of mixed breeding only when you have that extreme act of inserting male reproductive organ into female anatomy. From here, even holding the two animals together while cohabiting, if they're of different varieties, that would be prohibited. The Gemara says that's not really the case. My achiza, the term achiza that we saw in this Tanaic source, hachnosa, it's really a reference to what Shmuel was speaking of earlier, of actual insertion of male reproductive organ. V'amai kori lo achiza, why did the source use the word achiza instead of the word hachnosa? Answer, lishno malya. It's a more refined form of speech. Holding them together, when we know the actual understanding of that is insertion, but speaking in such vivid terms is a compromise of refined speech. Omar Rav Yehuda, min b'mino mutter lahachnis kemachol shaveris, va'afilu mishum pritzu soleko. Rav Yehuda tells us that if you are a person involved with animal reproduction, and you want to mate two animals of the same variety, you are allowed to do what we described above: insert male animal reproductive organ into the female area of reproduction to actually cause the physical insertion, to physically insert. And we're allowing that and saying that there isn't even a hint of lewdness. Now, the concept of lewdness, of pritzusa, is reflected by the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zorah, where the Gemara says that one should not gaze upon even animals while in a state of copulation, a state of reproductive activity. Why not? Because when seeing the mating of even animals together, it can conjure up, we'll say, thoughts of immorality in a person's mind, and the Torah law is very sensitive and very very much in objection to people containing those thoughts in their head. So Rav Yehuda is revealing to us that if you are a person raising animals, and in order to step up the reproduction, you have to get involved involved fashion as we just described, you can do it, and we're not worried about that pritzus consideration. My time, oh, why are we lenient? Ba'avidite torid. He is preoccupied with making sure that they effectively mate, and because he's so involved with seeing to it that they effectively mate, he's not going to start conjuring up additional external lewd thoughts of male-female cohabitation. Mosev Rabach Tevuye Ba'ami. He again appears as raising an objection. Of course, this is a new point, but he raises the following question, and we continue now at the top of Amud Beis. Ilu Nemar. Had the Pasuk said, Behemtecha lo sabia, Hoyisi Oimer, I would have thought, Lo yechos odem esabeimu kidei shiale oleo zohar, that one shall not hold a female animal in place so that a male animal arises upon her. So I had the Pasuk said, as with Behemtecha lo sabia, sabia has to do with causing reproduction. And that's not a literal. It's not a literal translation, but it's a translation in context. But the pasuk doesn't stop with that. Talmud Lomar Kilayim. It says in the pasuk, "Behemtecha lo sarbia Kilayim." Kilayim who da'aser. With regard to Kilayim, holding them together would be prohibited. Homin b'mino shori. However, two animals of the same variety, male and female sheep, for example, you would be allowed to what? Allowed to hold them together. Umin b'mino nami, but even within the realm of that which is permitted, two animals of the same variety, achizain, achnasalo, all that we're willing to allow is holding the animals together, but insertion of male reproductive organ into the female, no, we wouldn't allow that. And yet Rav Yehuda at the bottom of Amud Aleph seemed to allow even that. The Gemara responds, my achiza, what is meant in the Tanaic source when it speaks about holding together, which we said is prohibited only with regard to kilayim, hachnosa, the actual insertion of organ, but holding together is not simple holding together of two animals is not something that the source was mentioning. The source was dealing with actual insertion. V'amai kori le'achiza, why, if the source is talking about actual insertion, does it use the word achiza? Lishna ma'alya. Once again, refined speech. But as far as actual law is concerned, we say that when it comes to min b'mina, when it comes to two like varieties of animals, two male and female sheep, more male and female goats, male and female cows, two of the same variety, you're allowed even to do hachnasa, just like Rav Yehuda taught. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, Sheila Shinishal Rav Ashi, a question that was asked of Rav Ashi, Be'inyan Kilei Behema, Mal Lachnis Ladir Min Umino V'she'ino Mino. Can one put into the same stall three animals, two of which of the same variety, and a third animal which is of a different variety? The Gemara. Omar Ravashi, Ha Milsa Bo'u Minoi Debe Rav Nechemya Resh Galusa. The following was asked of me by the members of the house of the of Rav Nechemya, who was the Resh Galusa, the exilarch, the head of the Jewish community in the diaspora. Mahu Lahachnis Min Umino V'she'eno Mino Ladir. Would one be allowed to usher into a stall a min me'umino, two animals of the same variety, and a third animal of a different variety? Kevon de iko mine, since the male animal has the option of its own kind there, boser mine gorer, it will follow its own, and there's no fear of a kilayim reproduction taking place. Oidilma, or possibly a filu hachilo, even though it has its own variety there, we still aren't going to allow it because there's another variety that's present. Upashti luhuli sura delo kichasa, and I answered their question, but not reflecting letter of the law, in order to impose a stringency upon them, mishum pritzuso di avdi, because in that household there were slaves, and slaves behave in a pritzustika, in a lewd fashion, and in this context we might explain the pritzus of the avdi as being an explanation that they wouldn't hesitate to mix breed animals. So in an environment like that, we impose an extra level of caution and prohibit even that which is otherwise permitted by letter of the law. I think it's worth noting that you find in other places in the Shas, the slaves that were members of the exilarch family, you find in a number of cases that they were those that you could simply not rely on. They were those that had a tendency to violate Torah law. So you can understand very well why Rav Ashi would rule the way he did, restricting the keeping of these animals together in the same stall. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah, we glance once again in the margin. We have a topic heading, Machloikas Tanoim. We'll see a Tanaic controversy. Be'inyan Achilas Poyalim, with regard to laws concerning workers' entitlement to eat from that which they're working on. Be'mi Shoyse Malachtoi B'yoda V'loi Baraglov Oya Hefech. Someone whose work involves the use of his hands and not his feet, or his feet and not his hands, mahu shiochal, is he entitled to eat under circumstances like that? The Mishnah. Haya oisa biyodav avalo baraglov. The type of activity that this worker is involved with is one that involves only his hands, as far as his feet are concerned, he remains stationary. Beraglav avalobiyodov, or a type of activity that requires the use of his feet, but not the use of his hands. Imagine someone is hired to trample upon grapes for winemaking. So he's a person that's using his feet, not his hands. Afilu bixefo, if someone is engaged by using his shoulder alone, hare ze ochel, he is entitled to eat. In other words, you don't need total body involvement in order to entitle the worker to eat from the produce that he's working on. Rabbi Yosi b'Yehuda omer ad shiase b'yadav uraglav. Rabbi Yosi, on the other hand, says the worker must be fully involved, hands and feet, before he'd be entitled to the Torah food entitlement of eating from that which he's working on. Now, the Gemara, my taima, what is the reason for the Tanakama, that even partial physical involvement is sufficient? Ki savoy bekerem reacho. The pasuk which deals with worker food entitlement says when the worker enters the vineyard. Bechol my David, he enters the vineyard for work, with whatever kind of work he is going to be doing, whether it's hand type work or foot related work, that is enough for him to be entitled to eat. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Shiase B'Yodav Uraglav, my time with Rabbi Yosi B'Yehuda. What's the reason for his say strict ruling that you need to, the worker would need to involve his hands and feet in the activity before he'd be entitled to eat? Answer, ki shor, like an ox. Now, in previous dapim, we've seen that laws concerning worker eating are derived from laws concerning the prohibition of muzzling an animal, which in effect is animal food entitlement during work. So, and we compare one to the other. Ma shor ad shiase b'yadav uraglav, just like a shor when it is threshing, as is featured in the pasuk. He is involved with its front legs and its hind legs, in other words, with its hands and its feet. Af poyel, so to a worker, ad shiase b'yadav uraglav, he too must be involved with all of those limbs, hands and feet. Boy rabo ba ravuna. Dosh is threshing. Ba vozim v'tarnegoylim v'rabiosi v'rabiuda mahu. Imagine one uses fowl. Avozim and tarnegolim. Tarnegolim are often translated as chickens, for the purpose of threshing. And we're asking the question according to Rabiosi Rehuda. Are we ask as follows, mahu, bechol koychei bo'inav v'ika, in order for the animal to be entitled to eat, namely the prohibition of muzzling, would be only if the animal is using all of its strength that it ordinarily uses for whatever. V'ika, The avosim tarnagolim, they have basically only 2 feet. They don't have, the rest of the animal is a body. It's true they have wings, but that doesn't correspond to the hands of the front legs of an animal. The wings are used only for flight, but they're not used for anything else. So with regard to threshing with fowl, they place their weight upon only feet, and therefore the laws of prohibition of muzzling would apply. Oy dilma biyodav uberaglov boinon v'aleka. In order to impose the laws of food entitlement to animals, you would have to have both hands and feet, like we saw in the pasuk by the ox. And in the case of fowls, you don't have hands in addition to the feet. Teku. So this remains unresolved, the issue of threshing with the use of fowl. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Bavua, Poalim, with regard to workers, ad shelo hilchu shti v'orev bagas, oichlim anovim v'ein shesin yayin. If they were talking about workers that will be trampling the grapes that are in the vat holding the grapes, if until they have walked over the grapes, shtiv yarev in a crisscross fashion, they are entitled to eat from the grapes, but not entitled to drink from the wine. Mishilchu shtiv yarev begas, at the point that they've walked crisscross in the vat on the grapes, at that point, they're entitled to not only eat from the grapes, but also drink from the wine. There's a Rashi, three lines from the top, ad shelo hilchu, prior to their walking crisscross, darkan lahatil anovim alagas, the custom or their way was to place grapes on a vat, within a vat, v'dorchim braglam alagas, and trample them by foot. V'ad shelo hilchu b'shtiv yorev, ein melachta nikeres b'yayin ela banovim. Their activity is not recognizable with regard to wine, only with regard to the grapes. Lefikach ein shoysin yayin. At that early point, therefore, they cannot drink from the wine. Tahavilei oise b'min zeh, v'oichel b'min acher. That would be tantamount to working on one thing, the grapes, and eating from something else, which we know, and you're going to see this highlighted in the next Mishnah immediately, if you're working on one item, one variety of thing, you're not entitled to eat from another variety. Now the Mishnah. On the side, as we just indicated a moment before, we have a topic heading which says Oisin b'min zeh lo yochal b'min mimin acher. A worker who is working on one variety of produce, he is not allowed to eat based on, we'll say, worker eating entitlement. However, he's not allowed to exercise that right by eating another variety, a different variety from that which he's working on. The Mishnah, if he's working on figs, he is not to eat grapes. Banovim, if he's working on a vine, on grapes, then lo yochal b'tanim, he shall not eat from figs. Avol moinea es atzmoi ad shemagia lemokom yofois v'oichel. He is, however, entitled to withhold himself from eating all that he would want to eat now. We'll say withholding from eating now, we can say he'd then be building up an appetite and then end up eating from the good ones, the nice ones later on that he will be working on. V'kulan lo amru elo b'shas melacha. Avol mishum hoshev aveda lebailim amru poyulim oichlin bali chosin mumen leuman uvechazirosim enagas ubechamor kishi porekes. The Mishnah tells us that in all cases of worker entitlement, they are entitled to eat only simultaneous or while they are doing the work, the work itself. Let us take a look at the Rashi, the Chulan Lo Amru, Rashi at the upper part of the narrow lines, the Chulan Lo Amru, Sheyochal Ela Bishah Shu Oiseg Bamalacha, only while he is actually doing the work, Velo Sheyeshev Loi V'yochal Loimar, and not where we would allow a worker to go and sit down and eat while sitting, while resting, while sitting, Lomar, with the claim, listen, Hare Monati Atzmi Adkan, Lo Batalti Lechol, Achshav Eshev Li V'ochal. Until now, I didn't take off any time. I didn't stop the work while I was working for eating. So I accrued a certain amount of time by not having eaten while working. So now I'm going to sit by the side and eat while sitting. So that we do not allow, by letter of the law. However, the Mishnah went on to say, and now we continue with the Rashi, Avo Mipnei Hosheva Veda Lebailim, Shelo Yevatel Mimalachtoi V'yochal, so as to prevent a loss to the owner, the one who hired the worker. Amru Poyalim Oichlim Bali Chosan Meumen Luman. When a worker finished, let's say, working on one row of produce, and they are going from one row to the next, even though while walking from one row to the next, he's not involved with the actual, let's say, plant work. He's walking from row to row. The owner would actually prefer that during that time the worker would do his eating, so that when he's doing the actual manual labor on the produce, he wouldn't be stopping for eating purposes. He will have eaten while walking from row to row. The Mishnah ended off with a statement concerning the unloading of a donkey. The Gemara will deal with that later on. We turn now to the Gemara, and before reading the text, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading, which reads, She'ela. We raise a question. Oise begefen ze, mahu she'yochal begefen acher. If a worker is working on one particular vine, can he eat from grapes growing from another vine? Rashi explains, Shiyakutz gefen yofe, v'yelech lemakom shu oived sham v'yochal. That would mean to cut off a cluster of fine, high-quality grapes and walk with them to another vine where he is working, and eat those grapes that he cut off from the fine, high quality vine, and eat them there. So now the Gemara. Ibayaloh oise begefen ze, mahu sheyochal begefen acher. Now the Gemara presents the two sides of the question, and we already explained, as Rashi said, the issue is cutting off a cluster of high quality grapes and carrying them to another vine where he will be working, and while working at that other vine, he's eating these high quality grapes. Is that allowed? So two sides of the question. Mimin shata noisein lekelov shabalabayas boinon vahaleka. This is a paraphrasing or based on the pasuk that speaks of the worker entering a vineyard and eating from that which he is working on. When we speak about eating from that which he is working on, are we referring to the variety of fruit that he's working on? And in this case, it's the same variety. When he would take the cluster from one location and eat it while working on grapes in another location, it's the same variety, and hence conforming to the pasuk expectation. And va'iko means it is. You have fulfilled that. Oy dilma mima shatanoisin the kelev shabalabayas boinon v'haleka. Or do we say you're entitled to eat from the very item that you are currently putting in the vessels of the owner? In other words, you're harvesting grapes for the owner, putting the grapes into his vessel, and the Torah permission granted to the worker is only to eat from those very grapes that you are right now putting into the vessel of the owner. And that would not be the case here when you are when you've taken a cluster of grapes from one location and eating them while working on the grapes putting those other grapes into the vessels of the owner. There's a bracketed section. I just want to point out, we have a little starred note on the side of the Gemara. Besocha sograim, within the brackets, HaGemara ma'ala temiya, the Gemara raises a point of wonderment. L'shelachara ein mokom l'shola sheila. There would seem that there's no room for even asking the question to begin with. V'achar kach mazbiro sheyesh metzir shedayin nitan l'shol ha'sheila. And then the Gemara will answer within the brackets that there still is room for asking this question. Following the brackets, the Gemara then deals with the question itself, trying to answer it. So now, that having been said, let's look into the brackets. V'im timtza lomar oisa begefen ze loy yoichal begefen acher. If the result or the response to the question would be one of restriction, one of prohibition, that if you're working on one vine, you can't eat the grapes that came from another vine. The laws of human food consumption are parallel to the laws of animal permission of eating what it's working on. So if you're going to say that in the case of human labor, then shor b'mechubar hechi ochil, an animal is entitled, we know that from Gzeres HaKosev, from scriptural exegesis, that one must provide for his animal also the option of eating while it's working on plants that are still attached to the ground, produce that's still attached to the ground. But how will that be possible? You have to imagine, envision the size of an ox. It's walking along. Where its mouth is located is quite a distance from the back part of the animal, which might be involved with the work that the animal is doing. So that you have it, the animal itself would then be eating from one plant, while the work that it's doing has relevance to another plant. The Rashi elaborates the Iamris. Rashi that we're looking at is a little bit less than halfway down. The Iamris, Lomali Lemivi Laha, where is there room to even ask this question? Pshita the Oichel, it's obvious that the worker would be entitled to eat from fruits coming from one plant while working on another plant of the same variety. The E Eino Oichel, if you were to rule that the worker cannot do that, then shor b'mechubar, the rabinu liel, the ochil, the animal that we've included from scriptural analysis, is also allowed to eat from that which is attached. Well, hechi ochil, how would that be possible? Hare melechas shor b'mechubar, in the case of an animal working on that which is still attached, e efshelo leechol migefen shu oise ba, it's impossible for the animal to eat from the vine that its work is manifest upon. Shrei koshur l'tzemed l'fnei ho'agola v'boitzrin oisin begefen she'etzel ho'agola v'noisnin ba'agola. You have the cow that's attached by a brace to a cart, and the animal is drawing the cart into which workers are placing the harvest grapes. So that's the animal's, we'll say, work contribution, and hence where the animal's mouth is, as we said before, is far away from where the cart it's drawing is found. So how would it be possible if you're going to rule in a stringent fashion? The Gemara answers, Omar Rav Shisha Brei de Rav Idi Besarcha. It is possible that there is the restriction that the worker is entitled to only from the plant that he is working on. And you'll ask, how is that then possible in the case of an animal working b'mechuber? The answer is sarcha. What's sarcha? A very long branch. a long branch from the same vine that the workers are picking grapes from. So you can have the tip of the branch near the animal's mouth, while the trunk or the base of the vine is where the workers are currently working, picking the grapes, and the animal is eating then from the same plant that the work is currently being done to. So we've presented that both possibilities, a ruling of leniency, a ruling of stringency, are both realistic. So what's the answer? Do we allow oise begefen zeh velechol begefen acher toshma? You'll notice if you scan down the page that triangles appear, and they'll appear in alternating directions. And we've indicated on the side why this is the case. The triangles, first of all, highlight the expression toshma, an attempt to resolve this particular question with the point facing up. That will be an attempt to show that ochel, that we allow, we'll say, we provide a lenient ruling. The inverted triangle, eino ochel. So now the Gemara. Toshma. If one is working on figs, he's not entitled to eat from grapes. Here you have two different varieties. However, if you were to have a parallel case of grapes parallel to the case of te'enim and anovim, grapes and grapes, he would be allowed to eat. Well, fi I amris oise begefen ze eino oichel begefen acher hechi mishkachas law. If you're going to say that working on taking grapes from one vine and eating them while working on another vine is not allowed, well then how will there be a manifestation of the inference that we just made that said te'enim and te'enim, figs from here and figs from there, one would be allowed? What would be the scenario that in which we could allow it if we're not going to say oise begefen zeh oichel begefen acher? Omar Rav Shisha b'rei d'Ravidi. So Rav Shisha rejects the attempted response by saying b'mudleis, the case of te'enim and anovim that we prohibited involved the case of mudleis. Now we'll explain that much more thoroughly by going to the Rashi. The Rashi will find about halfway, a little more than halfway down the page, Amar Rav Shisha b'rei d'Ravidi le'olam travayu bo'inan. In fact, you require not only the same variety of produce before a worker can eat, but it's got to be on this from the same item on which he's working, namely mimin u'mima, mimin from the same variety and mima from that plant specifically that he's working on. V'haid itzrich l'misni teinu v'anovim, and the need for the source to teach the case of two different varieties. If one is working on figs, he's not allowed to eat from grapes. V'daikis, and then we inferred from that ha te'enim u'te'enim ochel, but if he's going to be eating from figs while working on other figs, he's allowed. The case is b'teina hamudleis al hagefen, gefen mudla al te'ena. The word mudla has to do with one is supporting the other. You have plants that are, sometimes you find plants that are raised upon stakes that are driven into the ground. In this case, we're talking about plants that are not lying upon stakes, but lying upon another plant. Specifically, we're talking about let's use one example to prevent too much confusion. Imagine a grape vine that is resting upon a fig tree. Rashi continues, Vashminen, and we're telling you here, if you're, let us say, in that case, working on grapes, you're picking the grapes, you're not allowed to pop into your mouth figs. Even though you're involved with both of them, while harvesting the grapes, you have to, and it's resting on the fig tree, you have to move the branches of both plants to separate one from the other to facilitate your harvesting process. While he's cutting, so you have to manipulate and maneuver the branches of both. So you're, in effect, you're working on both. However, if you're going to let us say you're currently harvesting grapes that whose branches are supported on the fig tree, the variety that you're working on, that your main focus is on the grapes. It's true that you're physically manipulating the other variety as well, but that's not what your work is focused on. So in a case like that, we said that if you're working on the grapes, you're not entitled to eat from the figs. And then we inferred, ha te'enim utenim dumyo dahani. If, however, you have figs and figs, similar to what we just described, kigon. What do you mean by that, similar? Hamudles al chaverta. You have one fig tree whose branches are resting upon another fig tree. And there's a certain amount of intertwining of branches, and your goal is to harvest the figs from one of the trees. Ein tzorach lahavchin me'ez men yochal. In a case like that, we're not insistent upon your differentiating from which one you are to eat. The mimin sha'ata noisein umima sha'ata noisein hu. The bishneim u'asuk. In that case, we have, as we mentioned, two fig trees, one lying on, resting on the other. So they're both figs, so it's the same min, it's the same variety. And you're also involved with both of them, that's the bishneim u'asuk. You're involved right now with manipulating, with maneuvering both of them. Therefore, we will tell you only that we would allow, but to take a grape cluster from one vine and carry it over to another vine and eat the former grapes at that latter location, so even though it's the same min, it's not mima, it's not the item that you're working on. Our ability to infer ha te'enim utenim dumya te'enavonim is only in the case of mudleis, where, as we said, and now we're just repeating ourselves, where in addition to the fact that the two te'enim is the same min, you're manipulating both of them, so you're in effect involved with both of them as well at the same time. Toshma. Now you notice the inverted triangle, so the attempted direction here is to say he would not be allowed to eat the high quality grapes that he took from one vine while working at a second location thereupon. Toshma. Avol moneas atzmo ad shemagia lemokum hayofois ve'oichel. We saw in the Mishnah that a worker is entitled to withhold himself, to restrain himself from eating right away, and we'll say build up an appetite, and then when he gets to the site of the high quality fruits, he'll be working on them and eat his till satisfaction from the high quality grapes. He'll be eating more of the high quality grapes than he would have had he started eating at his previous location where he was working on the lesser quality. If you would say that while working on one vine, you are entitled to eat the grapes from another vine, then Nezel v'nesi v'nechel hasam. Why doesn't he simply take right at the outset the high quality grapes from where they are and bring them to the other location and work on the lesser quality grapes while eating the higher quality grapes? So you can see from the fact that the only option of eating the high quality grapes is by eating them on location when you're working on them, so that we would have the we therefore issue the more restrictive ruling. The Gemara responds, Mishum bitul melacha lo kame bayalon. As far as a situation that will involve loss in work time, and that would certainly be the case over here. If you take the source at face value, the restriction is not because of oisa begefen ze einu oichel begefen acher, but the restriction here is because of the what's called bitul melacha. It's the time that he would have to take off to walk. Let us just say he's working right now on a lesser quality vine. The alternative that he has is to stop his work, go to the higher quality vine and take grapes from there and bring them back to the lesser quality vine that he's currently working on. That involves bitul melacha, stopping drawing on the time that he would otherwise invest totally in the lower quality grapes, and take from that time to go to the higher quality grapes and bring them over here. So it's on those grounds that we would not allow the consumption of the higher quality grapes while working on the lower quality plants. That's obvious. Ki kami bayalon, when the question arises, hecho deiko ishto uvonov mai. Let us say, once again, the man is working on the low quality vines. And while he is working on the low quality vines, his wife, the worker's wife, or the worker's sons, they cut off high quality grapes and bring them over here to where the worker is functioning. Is that allowed? Now, in that scenario, the worker himself, who's hired to work and getting paid for his work time, isn't taking off any work to fetch the grapes, the higher quality grapes, from the other location. Is this allowed? Is that nevertheless allowed? Ta shma. Again, the inverted triangle indicates that we're going to try to prove in the direction of prohibition. V'chulam lo omru elo b'shas melacha. The heter, the allowance, the provision of workers to eat, is only when they're involved in the actual work on that particular plant, or on that, or while they are working, then they're entitled to eat. If it's not while they are working, then they're not entitled to eat. That's what we'll call letter of the law. The Mishnah went on to say, so as to increase the owner's benefit from work output on the part of the workers, Amru, so the halacha says, they say, the rabbis say, Poyalim oichlin b'hali chosin me'uman lo'uman u'b'chazirason min hagas. Workers are allowed to eat during the time they're walking from one uman, one row of plants, till the next row of plants. They have to walk anyway, so let them eat during that time. During the time that they're returning from the site where the grapes are being pressed. So during that walking time, even though during the walking time they're not working on the produce itself, but the owner himself would benefit by the workers eating then. A new marking appears, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, we indicate the diamond which is the diamonds which are accompanied by Roman numerals 1 and 2, Savruha. These Savruha means our initial thinking. Shnei Lishonis Hafuchos Lifshoit Shelasenu. We'll see two opposite versions in the Gemara that are presented to resolve our question. Al Pi Ha Dekotani V'Mishneh, based on that which it said in the Mishnah, Kulam Lo Amru, etc. The double underline marking that we'll see in the Gemara highlights the word Alma. Hanisyonos, these are the attempts, Lahasik Maskona L'Sheila, to achieve a resolution of our question. Now, the Gemara. Savrua, the initial thinking is, Mehalech Ka'oise Maise Domi. That walking for the benefit of the owner, walking from one row to the other, is considered maise, oise maise. Now, oise maise means that it's grounds for the worker to be entitled to eat. And even so, umishum hashev aveda labailim hu de'ochil midoraisa lo'ochil. The allowance for eating while walking from row to row is only to increase the owner's benefit from work output on the part of the worker. That he'll eat while he's walking instead of while he's working on the actual plants. Midoraisa lo'ochil. But on a Torah level, he would not be allowed to eat in that fashion, namely while walking from one row to the next. Now, in walking from one row to the next, he'd be in effect taking the grapes from one row of vines to the next row. Alma, we would conclude, therefore, Oysa begefen zeh, ein elecho begefen acher. That eating from grapes of one vine is not allowed while working on another vine. Lo, do not conclude that from this source. Lo oilam ei malach oisa begefen ze oichel begefen acher. It might very well be that you are entitled to eat the grapes coming from one vine while working on grapes attached to another vine. Umahalech lav ka'oisa maisa domi. The special provision of the source that spoke about we allow eating while walking from one vine to the other, that's an allowance, we'll say, that's beyond the letter of the law, because as far as the letter of the law is concerned, he's not considered oisa maisa. He's not considered involved with work while walking from one row to the other. Oh, he's not involved with oisa maisa. He's not considered doing actual work. Then certainly by midoraisa, certainly he's not entitled to eat. It's only because of hashev aveda lebailim, to increase owner benefit from work production, that we allow the eating under those circumstances. So we cannot conclude our question from the source that deals with the walking from one row to the other. It doesn't parallel our question. Our question involved eating in the context of oise maisa, and the source reflected eating under circumstances that are not even oise maisa. Iko diamri, and another version, an opposite version. Savrua, the initial thinking is that mahalech lav koise maisa domi, the walking of the worker from one row to the next is not considered actual work, actual action and work and activity on the produce. V'hainu taimo d'midoraisa lo'achil, and it's because of that we would conclude that from the Torah standpoint, he's not really entitled to eat. Mishum d'lavkoisa maisa domi, the walking from one row to the next is not considered action and work that would entitle him to eat. Now we can infer, though. Ha, oise maise, achil midoraisa. If, however, he was not merely walking, but he was carrying on his shoulder the harvested produce from one location to another, then he would be entitled to eat from the Torah perspective. So imagine then he has a harvest of grapes that he's carrying on his shoulder, and he's walking from one location to another while carrying the grapes. He's oisa maisa. Alma, we be able to conclude, oisa begefen zelicho begefen acher. He's eating the grapes that he's harvested from his initial location, and he's walking to another location where he'll be doing work there. Or even the mere carrying of the grapes to another location is enough for us to conclude going from one to another, you're nevertheless entitled to eat. And as the Gemara says, Alma oisa begefen zeichel begefen acher. Lo, do not conclude that. In general, while to eat grapes that grew from one vine and eat them while working on another vine would not be allowed. Umahalech, the Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis, Umahalech ke'oise maise domi. So as opposed to the Savrua stage, which the initial thinking, according to this second version, was that Mahalech is not considered Oisa Maisa. Here we're telling you that the walking from one row to the other is considered like Maisa. And Rashi at the top explains, Umahalech Oisa Maisa Domi, Vafilu Hachi. Even so, Ilav Mishum Hashovas Aveda, if not for our concern for maximum benefit to the owner, lo ochil, he would not be allowed to eat. So that, according to this, we'll say rejection, the result would be that oise begefen ze would not be allowed to eat begefen acher. Ubechamor kishi porekes. The Mishnah made reference to eating while the donkey is being unloaded. So the Gemara says kishi porekes while it's being unloaded. And we did not mention before is say the initial translation of the Mishnah would be that the donkey is entitled to eat while it's being unloaded. So if you stick with the, we'll say, the literal translation, that gives rise to the Gemara, to asking, Kishi porekes, while the animal is being unloaded, mehechan ochla, from what is the animal going to be eating? You're unloading whatever grains, whatever food items it was carrying, so it's being removed from the animal, from where it's going to eat. Ema, so rather say, ad shite porekes, that the animal is entitled to eat up till the point that it's being unloaded. So that the animal is entitled to eat from the food that it's carrying on its back. Tanina leha de Tanu Rabbanan. We have a brisa that bears out the conclusion that we just drew from our Mishnah. Chamor v'gomol, a donkey, a camel, oichlin, mimasui shal gabem, are entitled to eat from the package, the burden that's on their back, from the load of produce that's on their back. What one is not allowed to do is to take from the produce on the animal's back and feed the animal by hand. I think it's obvious, but we'll just illustrate this in a slightly more vivid fashion. We're talking about an animal that's being accompanied, let's say, by a worker that's transporting produce owned by the owner, so that the animal is entitled to twist its head and eat from the produce that's slung over its back. However, the worker accompanying the animal is not allowed to take the owner's produce that's on the animal's back and feed it to the animal. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.